Good morning.
Good morning.
So this retreat is sometimes called the Rohatsu in Japanese, and that means like the end of the year observance. And it commemorates, as you know, Shakyamuni Buddha's enlightenment. So sometimes some places, you know, the tradition is to put the pedal to the metal, as they say, and go in for various exertions with the hope of attaining what Dogen calls Daigo, great enlightenment. So, as I said last night, and I'll probably mention this again because there'll be some other people joining us who aren't here yet. You know, you can do that stuff if you want, but I... now that I'm kind of old and decrepit, it's occurred to me to wonder whether that actually represents what Shakyamuni Buddha, what his ripened understanding was of the meaning of effort. As we know, he... come on in. It's okay. Are you here for the 10:30 sitting? Well, we're doing something different this week, so but you can come in anyway. Sure. Shakyamuni, of course. Investigated various paths because various things were available in his lifetime, in his era, and some of them were available to people with a lot of money and power, and some of them were available to people with enough health that they could subject their bodies to some extremely severe punishment. And the prevailing understanding was that if you could do that, come on in.
Sorry.
It's okay. Well, come on in. We pulled a fast one on you this week.
Sorry.
So this is our retreat for the year. But you're welcome to sit with us, and then after this talk we'll sit some more, and the schedule's on the door, and you can sit anytime that you want to come
okay.
with us, and where Brian's sitting here listening to the talk too, so you can do that too if you want. So, so the notion was that if you subject yourself to severe self-abnegation and punishment, you will acquire a certain power that in Sanskrit is known as tapas, which actually means heat. And that this heat would actually consume obscuring karma and enable one to manifest various sorts of spiritual attainments. It also had the effect that when it reached a certain point, the gods in the heavens above would start to get uncomfortable. Their carefully climate-controlled heavens would start to warm up, and they would get irritated, and they would say, who's raising the thermostat? And then they would look down and see that someone was accumulating tapas. And then they would send various celestial entities down to tempt that person who was practicing tapas into some sort of sexual impropriety, whereupon all the tapas would vanish, and then the heavens would cool down. And then the ascetic would be defeated, and the gods would be pleased. So this was the sort of notion that was floating around in Buddha's time. And Buddha tried all that stuff. And he tried starving himself and various yogic positions, and he tried various meditative practices involving the cessation of thought. And then, as the story goes, you know, he didn't find any of those particular paths to be particularly helpful, because his question was, why do we suffer? And none of those suggested paths seem to address that question specifically. So we say, anyhow, that Shakyamuni made another kind of effort. And first he took some nourishment for his body, which had almost wasted away. And when he had regained his strength, he sat down and decided he would, well, we might say, study the self, or just sit, or examine reality, or clarify the eye of birth and death until the question had been resolved. And the resolution of that question we call great enlightenment. The great way of the Buddhas has been transmitted with intimate attention. The work of the ancestors has been unfolded evenly and broadly. Thus, great enlightenment is actualized, and beyond enlightenment is the decisive way. So this, of course, is Dogen, our old friend. And his great skill in expressing the teaching has led me to think of him as Great Master Yo-Yo. Because somewhere the other day, and I saw one of those people with a yo-yo, and who was like doing that thing where you fling it way the hell out and then bring it back to your hand. And that's what he does. He's constantly throwing it way the hell out there, and then it comes back to his hand. So if you listen, you will hear that he is constantly traveling seemingly farther and farther away from accessible communication, only to return to an extremely pithy utterance. So, Great Master Yo-Yo says that this way has been transmitted with intimate attention. And intimate attention is another way of saying touching the heart, which of course is the translation of the word seshin. And I've been kind of avoiding using that word, seshin, because like many of the words we've borrowed from the Japanese vocabulary, it has a lot of baggage and freight that came with it that I don't find very useful. So when you say seshin, a lot of people get kind of nervous and uncomfortable, some people, and some other people get very excited and kind of ramped up. And I don't think either of those is particularly useful or accurate. So I've kind of been avoiding that. But another way of saying seshin is to say touching the heart or intimate attention, which is precisely how this Buddha way is transmitted. And intimate attention is not something additional to the perfect and careful unfolding of our life, moment after moment. And this retreat environment is set up simply to reflect that back to us relatively gently, over and over again, moment after moment, so that we can study this reality and how the self arises in the midst of it, arises and passes away, and how attachment in the midst of that process gives rise to suffering. And our steadfast, ungrasping, taking our seat over and over again in the midst of this ungraspable unfolding is itself Daigo, great enlightenment. Now you may say, well, that's impossible. And of course, Great Master Yo-Yo would agree with you and say, yes, that's right, it's impossible. Meaning, it's impossible for you to grasp and mess with, which is the whole point. If it were something you could grasp and mess with, it wouldn't be worth a dime. Instead, the ancestors have unfolded it evenly and broadly. So in your sitting practice, you may have the impression that your practice is not unfolding evenly and broadly. Now, our retreat is not it's not a very long retreat, so maybe you won't have so much trouble, or you won't have the impression that you're having a lot of trouble, but you might. This summer I turned 60, and my body is starting to protest certain usages. So I figure I'll have some trouble. And I might be tempted to think that my experience is not unfolding evenly and broadly. So I'm going to suggest that instead of believing that we take our seat over and over again in the midst of evenness and broad unfolding, instead of falling into, oh, this is terrible, I'm having problems, or oh, I'm in samadhi and I'm going to be enlightened soon, or any of these places along the way that are actually the these are substitutes for the even unfolding, the broadness of the Buddha way as the ancestors have transmitted it. So you might think, well, what if I had that thought? Like, oh, I'm having a terrible time. Well, that's okay. It's just that you don't have to take up residence there. It's just some thought. Or if you think, I have now achieved the ninth dhyana stage. Isn't this cool? Again, that's all right. You can have that thought. Although in that dhyana, you probably wouldn't. But you don't have to take up residence there. Instead, you can watch this remarkable tendency of the body-mind to grasp and latch on to just about anything, either in its positive reflex, which is to make it stay, or its negative reflex to get rid of it. And our little laboratory here is perfectly set up for that study. And what we are studying as we do that is, of course, nothing other than the self. This is how Daigo, or Great Enlightenment, is actualized. This is how it is not simply some academic study. This evenly and broadly is a, might say, a meditation instruction. I try not to fall into the trap of thinking that your sitting is cramped. Even if you have some pain or difficulty or discomfort, you don't have to believe that. See if you can respond to that by allowing your body to relax, by not being seduced by the conjurations of habitual thinking. Summon the yogic balance of this body-mind. You know, you straighten your back, keep your head upright, breathe fully, and allow those manifestations of our karmic life just to arise and pass away. This is what is meant by evenly and broadly. Okay? Now, this is the decisive way. And if you don't trust that, I would say, well, just maybe for the space of this little retreat, this heart-touching time, try trusting that. Even if you have various poisonous doubts, try to let them just kind of gently and respectfully brush them aside for the space of this time we have together, which, you know, isn't very long. We get right down to it. We have, let's see, what's today? Thursday? It's already Thursday. It's almost the weekend. The former abbot of Isanji used to say, the weekend starts after lunch on Thursday, so we're almost into the weekend, right? And so we have today, and then Friday, and then Saturday, and then Sunday we'll have our Bodhi Day celebration, and then we will once again disperse to the four corners of the globe. So we don't have that much time together. So for this time, I think it's okay if we respectfully invite our doubts to take a nap and embrace this thorough practice of the way where we don't try to go anywhere other than where we are just this moment. And the great Master Yo-Yo says, In this way, enlightenment is realized and played with. Nice, right? Like a yo-yo, playing. Played with. Enlightenment disappears in the practice of letting go. So as we've heard so many times, even if you hang on to something really cool like enlightenment, it'll turn to poison. So enlightenment receives its life in the practice of letting go, which is also called Zazen, which is also called just this body mind right now. So because of karmic life, there will be many, 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 in fact, all but infinite occasions for not letting go. That's called self. But each of those can be studied and seen for what it is, can be seen as the very body-mind, the very eye of birth and death. The very actualization of great enlightenment. And whereas you can't really, people, maybe sometimes ancient Buddha might tell us, well, just let go. But they don't really mean like that's something you can't do. If it were, well, we'd just do that, and that'd be the end of it. It's not quite like that, but we can do a kind of as I'm sure I've said, we can do a little ceremony of letting go, which is kind of like what I was referring to a minute ago, where you rouse the body mind, relax, breathe. Don't grasp at anything. Don't try to do anything or not do anything. Just express yourself entirely in silent, non-grasping sitting this moment. That's a ceremony of letting go. The actual letting go is not your business. Right? This, what we're talking about, this, says Master Yo-Yo, is the everyday activity of Buddhas and ancestors. Or as it's sometimes called, the everyday tea and rice of Buddhas and ancestors. This is what they do all the time. This is what, I submit, Shakyamuni Buddha discovered under that tree way back there in northern India, a descendant of which, we are told, grows there to this day, surrounded by tourist buses, apparently. This is their everyday activity. Okay, now, careful, because here goes the yo-yo. Enlightenment taken up activates the 12 hours of the day. Enlightenment hurled away is activated by the 12 hours of the day. Furthermore, leaping beyond the mechanism of time, there is twiddling with a mud ball and twiddling with spirit. Okay, let me try that again. Enlightenment taken up activates the 12 hours of the day. You could call that doing if you want. Enlightenment hurled away is activated by the 12 hours of the day. You can call that not doing if you want. Furthermore, leaping beyond the mechanism of time altogether, neither doing nor not doing, is twiddling with a mud ball. Are we on fire? Maybe not. Is twiddling with a mud ball and twiddling with spirit. Okay, now the yo-yo is just about out of sight at this point. Sorry. I think I have to read a little more so that the yo-yo can come back. Let's see here. Although it should be thoroughly understood that Buddha ancestors are invariably actualized from great enlightenment, it is not that the entire experience of great enlightenment should be regarded as Buddha ancestors. And it is not that the entire experience of Buddha ancestors should be regarded as entire great enlightenment. Okay, Yo-Yo's still out there. Buddha ancestors leap beyond the boundary of great enlightenment, and great enlightenment has a face that leaps beyond Buddha ancestors. Oh, okay, here we go. Here comes the yo-yo back. Now, human capacity is greatly varied. Okay, snap. There it is, back in our hands. So, after this great poetic flight of fancy, the yo-yo is now back in our hands. Human capacity is greatly varied, right? You can all get behind that. This is Dogen demonstrating over and over again how the mind of the ancient Buddhas is nothing other than our everyday tea and rice. Poetry is nothing other than the unfolding of this ancient mind. Poetry, as it has been said, is magic. And still, human capacities vary. We all know that. For example, there are those who have understanding already at birth. At birth, they are free from birth. That means they understand with the body at the beginning, middle, and end of birth. There are those who understand through study, ultimately understanding the self through practice. That means they practice with the body, the skin, flesh, bones, and marrow of study. So in this space of intimate attention, of touching the heart, we become even more acquainted with our skin, flesh, bones, and marrow. In a way that may, make us a little uncomfortable. Because the intimate details of skin, flesh, bones, and marrow are, it's a little gnarly in there. Attachment is so much a feature of our existence and manifestation as sentient beings that once you start to see that, it's like, there's kind of a, I don't know if I'd call it a problem, but it's a little challenging. And yet, skin, flesh, bones, and marrow are not other than great awakening. They cannot be. They cannot be other than the place of study. So we have set up this time and place for that study. And we have come together to support one another in that study. With our quiet and respectful presence, with our kind of silent warmth towards one another, our awareness of one another, so that we're careful not to step on somebody else's foot or ram someone with our elbow, either literally or metaphorically. You tend to learn that if you are sentenced for a time to a spell in a Zen center kitchen. You learn that you have to become quite artful at avoiding elbows and feet as the, for instance, the time for serving up the meal draws close and people start flying around with pots and pans and ladles, and you start to, it's like ice skating and avoiding all the other ice skaters. So we're kind of ice skating together here, and if, you know, we have a collision, we apologize. Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to step on you. Or maybe I did, and then I'm really sorry. This is intimate attention as practice. So if we bring forth this, the willingness to do this ceremony of letting go. Remember the ceremony, letting go itself, you don't have to worry about. So to say, coming to again and again, arousing or mustering the body mind, as Dogen says, relaxing, finding that place of balance. The spine be nice and long, lifting the rib cage, breathing easily and deeply, keeping the eyes open to let some light in, and not worrying about anything. This requires great faith. And, great faith and great enlightenment are inseparable. So that's kind of our doing, or if you like, our not doing, for this little time we have together. And, thank you all for coming together and making this effort, which is it's a great help to me, certainly. Because if you weren't here, I wouldn't be here either. I'd be, I don't know, at the gym or drinking tea or something. So I chose this essay, Great Enlightenment, in honor of Shakyamuni Buddha, in order to have something to talk about, since I have to give 4 talks during this retreat, which is a lot of talking as far as I'm concerned. So if you don't mind too much, we'll go on, you know, in the next couple of days. And see what Master Yo-Yo has to say. If you have some question or comment, that's fine.
The Shobogenzo?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Shobogenzo Daigo. Shobogenzo, Great Awakening.
And which
translation? Check,
yeah.
This
and
is the
which essay or whatever.
It's called Daigo or Great Awakening, and this is Kaz Tanahashi's translation, the newest one, and it's from the period where he was at Kosho Horinji Monastery. So he wasn't at Eheiji yet when he wrote this. He was must have been a hell of a guy. Doesn't seem like he had much of a sense of humor, but I don't know. Maybe he did. Yes, Jim.
You know, I get very hung up on the word enlightenment.
Yes.
And I actually don't like it. I don't like the idea of it.
You don't like the idea?
I don't like the idea of it.
Okay.
It sounds like I'm getting something I'm better than. So I sort of go with, I'm really okay with awareness.
Uh-huh.
That we sit here and study ourselves so that we can be fully aware or fully awake.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of enlightenment sounds like it's something to achieve, or all of a sudden I'm going to be a better person. So this whole idea of our hardship and all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just really struggle with that simply by leading an ethical life, by leading a life that is helpful to others. And
mm-hmm.
So, just my own struggle.
Yeah. Well, you are under no obligation to like it. But, of course, it is broadly represented in the tradition. But I you might take some consolation from Dogen's very, very clear emphasis on the fact that it is inseparable from practice. So he says over and over and over again, practice is not some ladder to enlightenment. So you let that take root in your heart, and then you won't feel like, I got to get to this thing called enlightenment. When he says stuff like, if it's not practiced, it's not manifested. If it's not realized, it's not attained. It's meant to be encouraging. He's not like holding out some carrot that we have to get. He's trying to tell us about what we're already doing, what you're already doing, without suggesting that we get ourselves yet another monkey on our back called enlightenment. Now, some people like to practice that way, it must be said. Personally, when I was doing that, I didn't find it very useful. In fact, I started to find it kind of ugly. But that's just me. I'm just saying. Some people find that kind of cool. Usually they're young males, I've noticed. No offense to any young males in the room. I'm just saying that some people really get off on that. But now that I'm not a young male, I don't know if that was time very well spent. So maybe, you know, you might make a particular study of this, the dynamic unity of practice and verification of practice and realization, which I personally find very encouraging. And it doesn't mean that, you know, cool things may not happen in our consciousness, because it may. But even if they don't, consciousness is already pretty cool. Human life is already pretty cool. Like Suzuki Roshi says, you may become, you know, greatly enlightened. But even if you don't, it's only a little bit different. And by golly, I think he's right. Thank you very much.
May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Illusions are